If you ask the average punter on the street, they might say that Australia doesn't have a history of slavery. But the practice of blackbirding, kidnapping Pacific Islanders and using them as forced labour, in particular on sugar and cotton plantations in the early 19th century, puts this into question. Councillor Wazakam Imelda Davis is the first black councillor for the City of Sydney and has just returned from Geneva, where she presented to the UN on the topic. Imelda, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, Imelda. Thank you for joining us.
That's good.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about your personal connection to blackbirding?
So my grandfather, my mother's father, was 12 years old when he was stolen off the beach in Tana, which is Vanuatu. And my great-great-grandmother was stolen from Ambai, again, Vanuatu. She was 14. My grandfather was 12. And my great-great-grandfather was from a mission or a reserve here in Harvey Bay. Mm. And that's where they placed us on the same mission stations, plantations, as First Nations people. So you'll find a lot of Australian South Sea Islanders, as we're recognised as, are also Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, or we have strong bloodlines and kinship to that community.
So growing up, were you very aware of this situation, the idea of blackbirding?
Most definitely, because you're born into it. So our families, I'm from the Tweed, up on the Gold Coast, from a little town called Chindra, which is quite a strong Australian South Sea Islander community group that moved away from the White Australia policy in 1901 and formed, you know, in the late, 1800s, 1860s, created a strong community moving away from Queensland control and establishing themselves as quite a significant cane-cutting, farming demographic on the Northern Rivers. So growing up, we picked peas. Like, I remember picking peas and, you know, potatoes with Nana, and we were very well aware that we are descendants of a Pacific slave trade.
Can you tell me a little bit about the work that those who were kidnapped, what work they went into, as opposed to the work that, say, the convicts of the time were doing?
Yeah, look, I think one of the biggest challenges for these young people is that, and my grandfather's story in particular that I can reference, is that they were stolen and they didn't know where they were being taken to, and they were enslaved to cut sugarcane for the next, 40 to 50 years. Mm. They were trafficked or moved across stations, plantations, reserves, placed on those same missions to actually build the economy in sugar, pastoral care. It was all sorts of industry work. But the difference here is that I think there was no real remuneration. Even though people were paid a certain amount of money, it was still quite significantly less than the other white counterparts were receiving. A lot of the deceased estates, so people had to sign up and create bank accounts, etc., that was absorbed back into the Commonwealth. So there were some 15-odd thousand that died within the first 6 months of arrival. All of those funds went back. It didn't get redistributed. Well, how do they keep track of anything, right? Mm-hmm. Redistributed amongst the families, etc. So, you know, it's one of hardship. Everyone's story is quite different and complex, and it's not to take away from other people's suffering. It's just another part of the story for Australia's shared history, really.
It's interesting there, Imelda, because you speak of some of those cases of the South Sea Islanders were paid poorly to their counterparts, but paid. I'm interested to find out, you know, whether or not these practices have been recognised as slavery, given that there was some sort of payment in certain instances.
Well, exploitation's exploitation, yeah? Mm-hmm. We talk about wage theft today in the modern day context where people are getting underpaid, undercut, and the compensation that's required for people that have been, you know, done by not receiving the right wages. Regardless, these people, our people, were not made no wealth out of this experience. we're still considerably marginalised today. You'll find that maybe some of the Italians and those that came after to do the cane cutting, setting up industries, they're still working today and they're quite wealthy in how they've achieved. So it was definitely a discriminatory practice, and, you know, racism feeds into it as well, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So you see it as slavery? Blackbirding was slavery? Yeah.
100%. We can't change what's happened, but we can definitely educate and share that pride with the rest of the nation. It's like the Anzacs, all the suffering that people have been through. Tomorrow I'll be wearing the badges of my Uncle William, who fought in World War II. And I'm proud of that contribution, despite being a descendant of a slave that still went to war for this country.
Mm. Well, look, if you've just joined us on RN Drive, my guest today is Imelda Davis, and we're discussing Australia's murky history of blackbirding. Imelda, you cut your teeth working with the civil rights movement here in the 1970s, and the connection with the black liberation movement happening in the US. How did those two work together?
Look, I was very young, and if anything, it was a lifestyle. In terms of being born black in this country, it is all about social justice. So it's just a lived experience, right? So my mother was very much involved with Black Theatre Redfern, Carol Johnson, who is one of the significant founders, or is the founder, of Nasa Bangara, etc. She was an African-American woman that came here with a vision in working with First Nations, and now today that dance school is one of the largest in the world, touring companies, Bangara. The movement was all about black collaboration and social justice and human rights. So as a child, we just witnessed and grow up, organically being a part of civil rights movements. So that's my grooming, or that's my upbringing, and that's what I've applied throughout my entire life, about being able to speak my truth and talk about accountability and how do we work better together, really. And that's the generosity of a community, in particular Australian South Sea Islanders, that are significantly displaced. There were 60-odd thousand brought here. Mm. That's quite a number of young men, in particular, stolen in their prime, and they recreated a life here in Australia. And, are very proud of the contribution that they made and still do make to this country. So, yeah, it's interesting. Everyone has a different kind of upbringing, right? But this was,
yeah, they do.
Yeah, very different.
Different upbringings inform how you look upon life today.
Yeah.
How do you think about blackness in Australia today?
Well, I'm a proud black woman. Anyone who knows me, I think it's really important that whether you're black, white, pink or purple, you stand strong in your identity and you understand who you are and where you're from and be proud of that. There's no shame in being whoever you are. So I think blackness is something that people may see as confronting, because you use that terminology and people say, I've been told, oh, no, you shouldn't say that. It's not right. But it is. It is what it is. Let's, keep it real here. Mm. I walk into a room, you walk into a room, people will know who's black, who's white. So let's just, keep it real. Mm. It's really not an issue. It's just about acceptance. It's also, I think, is how you assert yourself in life around identity. I think it's really important that we are free to be able to put forward our perspectives on what blackness is and what that represents. Mm.
Just rounding out on the what we started talking about, blackbirding, you were over in Geneva at the UN. What did you present there?
I presented a intersectional sort of look at Africans in Australia, in the Asia Pacific. The fact is that they never knew about blackbirding. I did present earlier in January this year when they flew me across, and they flew me across again just recently. So they were interested to hear more about the intersectionality of First Nations communities, Australian South Sea Islander communities, and African communities, because Africans date back to the First Fleet. They date back to relationships with the Torres Strait region, working in pearling and fishing, planting sugarcane in Australia. The first person to do that was a Caribbean man. And then there's the relationship with the contemporary mob that come over in terms of people of African descent, like my father came here in the 1950s as a musician, and he spent the remainder of his life performing a Caribbean carnival RSL club sort of show. But it was fantastic because you'll find that we look for each other or similarities when we travel, or even with the trade that happened, or the slavery, or however people see it as, people seek out people that look like them and they resonate, and they rebuilt communities with these people. The names are in our communities. When you go to Vanuatu, you got names like Togo, Nauru, Tambo, Malamu. They're all names from East and West Africa continent. But at the same time, it's so far over here in the Asia Pacific. So one of the challenges are that there are a hell of a lot of Africans across the Asia Pacific. A lot of challenges are being faced. A lot of social justice needs aren't being met. We've got the jails are full with our young African people of colour, black people, however people want to see it. And we've got real challenges, you know, that we need to address in a more unified approach, as opposed to just the Aboriginal, just the Torres Strait, just the, don't separate it out. We need to work together to start combating some of these challenges.
So with respect to mending and healing, I know that there's been an apology from the Bundaberg mayor and recognition from the federal Queensland and New South Wales governments about the South Sea Islander contribution to the economy and the agriculture. I mean, what is your picture for reconciling this part of the past?
Well, this is all a part of the healing and letting people know that we see you, because Australia's built on multi, it's a great nation, it's built on multiculturalism. If anything, it's the most successful multicultural society in the world, and we can demonstrate to the rest of the world just how inclusive we can be. Because with my term on council, my most recent 3 years, I brought recognition of Australian South Sea Islanders, that's supported. More recently, we launched the African-Australian Advocacy Report in the Lord Mayor's room just about a month ago, and bringing that demographic in so that people can see themselves as a part of mainstream society. So I think with all of that, it's a continued healing. It doesn't matter what you're doing in life, as long as you I guess, stay on track with the positive outcomes that we're trying to achieve as a society.
My guest today has been Councillor Wazakam Imelda Davis. Imelda, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.